Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
All right, Entree Architect community, welcome to the backstage area of Context and Clarity. Every Thursday afternoon on Context and Clarity Live, Catherine McPhail and I and our live audience talk with a special guest to search for clarity around the things that matter most to you, the architect, no matter what your context is. You may be the employee of a firm dreaming of doing your own thing, or maybe you've had a firm for a year or 10 years or 20 years, and you're starting to rethink or reimagine what that firm could or maybe even should be. Every week, we cover topics that fall under the broad umbrella of the business of architecture, and they're all the need-to-know topics for the success of architects just like you. If we've never met before, my name is Jeff Eccles, and what you're about to listen to is the audio recording of a conversation that my co-host, Catherine McPhail, and I had with a special guest. Or will it be guests from the Context and Clarity community? All of this to break down last week's Context and Clarity Live conversation. So thanks for joining us as we all share our biggest takeaways and look for ways to apply what we heard in the Context and Clarity Live conversation to our own businesses. Let's get into it. This episode of the Context and Clarity podcast is supported by Infratech. Bring indoor comfort to outdoor living with Infratech comfort heaters. Welcome to the backstage area of the Context and Clarity Studios. This week on Context and Clarity Live, Catherine McPhail and I talked to Diana Nicholas. She's a co-founder, president, and CEO of SOM Architecture, a hybrid firm based in Boston, Massachusetts, and with employees around the world. But we wanted to know what our audience thought about the conversation with Diana, so we've invited Isra Banks and Mandy Freeland to join us backstage. Isra is an architect, founder of Trivec Architecture, and educator at the Boston Architectural College. Mandy is the principal architect and CEO at aptly named Mandy Freeland Architect Incorporated in Bakersfield, California. So Isra and Mandy, welcome backstage. What did you think about that conversation with Diana today about the intersection between equitable practice and hybrid workplaces?
Well, first, thanks for having us here. It's awesome, always.
Glad to have you here.
And I think it was an awesome conversation. I think the first time I heard about SOM was from Diana Nicholas speaking on the BSA fall 3 years ago. So that probably was 2018, 3 years ago. And it was amazing. And I hear about it from my students too. Everyone wants to work in their office. It's very popular. When we touch on this subject about equity and office culture, the name of their office comes all the time. I remember I was sitting in the back and hearing a lot of people saying, well, we thought we have flexible offices because the traffic in Boston is very difficult to be on time there. So they have flexible, arrival and departure time. So like the first 2 hours are flexible. People can come at 8, 7, 6 and they leave once they're done with their work. But this is drastic, and the reactions were crazy. And of course, that was before. And she was confident, just like she was today. And I think one of the questions then were asked that I remember. How do you guarantee that your employees are not, well, I think that came up to you, are not doing the work, and how do you trust them? How would you fire them? She said, I never had to fire anyone. They're all loyal, and they're all hardworking, and they're all, we trust each other. And I think that came up again there. I think it's pretty similar to that 3 years ago conversation. There's trust, there's communication. And I am a strong believer when you appreciate your staff, they're definitely gonna appreciate the work. When you, same thing with everything, probably your children, your students, or that relation. The more you give, the more you get.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
The whole thing about trust. I mean, I think that's so obvious. A lot of the people do have questions about how do you know people are really doing their work. You have to trust it. I mean, I guess it would be the same thing in an office. She did say that made sense. And what I told her after we got off was that if there had been that kind of an office when I was young, then I wouldn't have had to start my own firm. Some flexibility, but the idea of working that many hours or 60 hours, 70 hours a week with little kids was not, I feel like, an option.
Catherine, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was thinking same thing. Starting out, when my kids were little, it was sort of the recession. It sort of was busy, busy work, 50 plus hours a week. And then the recession hit. And then I was home for a few years with the kids until I got hired again. I think it took like 3 years to get hired again. And people weren't hiring moms. And it was really that. It was literally that. They weren't hiring moms with little kids. Like literally when I say that, it was said to my face.
I went through the same thing.
Which is unfair. And as she was talking, I was like, wow, this really opens the door for women in such an amazing way that, women can get the work done and women can move their career ahead. Women can get the hours in that they are required to get in to get their license to do AXP. I think it's also great for people like doing the AREs, doing the exams, having, a study day a week or something, or like working the schedule around. I mean, working full time and trying to get the license is hard enough, but if you can work, get the job done and find time to study, that's amazing. I mean, what she talked about was just like the solution that we've kind of been waiting for in the profession. And I'm happy to see that she started it 7 years ago. It's not new to her. It's tried and it's gone through, 7 years of working through the bumps and, probably, changing the HR policies and working through, hiring. And I mean, it's great that she said she hasn't had to let anyone go or fire somebody. Another thing that you said, Ezra and Catherine, you touched on was trust. I've had conversations with a lot of firm owners, sort of older and maybe more traditionally minded, but they're adamant that they can't trust the workers to work from home, to be responsible for their own work and staying on task and staying on schedule, that the trust, like they can't, and maybe it's just a personal thing for them that they can't get past, just allowing people to work on their own. And I've been in that situation when I was working for a firm, just asking, if my child was sick that day, asking if I could take the laptop home and get the work done so I could keep the project on schedule. And the answer was no. And I'm like, well, I'm not sick. I can do the work. If I just take the laptop home, all the files are on it. I don't need to, plug in to the server or anything like that. I just need to get the work done. And the answer was no. And I was just really disappointed that I wasn't trusted enough to get work done on my own. So,
no, I'm happy to see that. Right. What do they think is going to happen if you work at home? I mean, if you get the work done, who cares what happens when you're at home, I guess, actually. So
I was already licensed and everything. Like, this wasn't even that long ago. This is, yeah. It surprises me.
I doubt that they're not wanting you to do that had anything to do with what they thought would happen or being licensed. I think it's, you know, the trust thing is an elephant in the room for the profession.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of elephants in the room, right? There's the trust piece. There's the culture of just ridiculous hours, et cetera. But I think the trust piece, we've got a lot of leaders out there that need to read a Simon Sinek book, need to listen to Brené Brown or somebody, right? Because that trust issue is not about your employees. It is not about your employees. It is about you. It is in you. So, you know, and that's in the conversation with Diana. I mean, I think it's obvious. Maybe it's not obvious, but yeah, it has to take a lot of trust to have unlimited in some of the policies that they have. As the three of you were talking, I obviously don't have the experience of being a mother. And when we were young, my wife and I were career people. So we, you know, when we were young, we didn't have young kids, but you were talking about AXP hours, Mandy, and it reminded me after I left the firm that I worked for in Chicago and moved here to Indianapolis to take a different position, I was, you know, kind of going through my IDP hours, and I had been there, I think almost exactly 2 years or so. And I started totaling everything up. And over the course of that 2 years, okay, it was a bad economy. So we had reduced work hours because of that to theoretically avoid laying people off. I took a full 2 weeks off to get married and have a honeymoon. I forget what else happened during that time. And I started adding up all my hours. And even with all of that, over the course of that 2 years, I averaged over 60 hours a week. So you take all that out and then put it back in, and I averaged over 60 hours a week. And I look at that, and we didn't have kids, right? So there's nothing in that realm that suffered. Again, we were career people. There's nothing like relationship-wise that suffered. My health definitely suffered. I weighed 240 pounds. Yeah, I mean, you're working like 18 hours a day and eating, you know, at the Greasy Spoon around the corner in the, you know, downtown Chicago or something like that.
Yeah. But you are a pretty tall guy, I'm just saying.
I am tall. There are some advantages to being tall, but that's not good for anyone. And so, first of all, you know, applause and appreciate what Diana, her partners, and others have figured out. And I asked that question earlier about, you know, the firms that said they couldn't do it in mid-March or whatever, and of course within a week had to do it. I hope that people are taking notes, because the culture, you know, in the profession, again, the elephants in the room, we all see it. Every single one of us knows it. Every single one of us has experienced it on some level. It's kind of crazy to me that it takes a global pandemic for the vast majority of the profession to actually want to do anything about it. And still we'll have people that don't want to and will resist and won't do anything about it, which is, again, it's just crazy. I'm not going to get too high up on a soapbox, you know, I'm glad, like you said, Mandy, I'm glad they've been working out for 7 years. They've learned a lot of, that's great.
Maybe I'll go apply to work there.
Well, you know, when she said, and of course, you know, Catherine, like I did, we've listened to Diana on Entree Architect podcast. We listen to interviews as we prepare for these conversations. And I was actually listening to one of those episodes today when I was driving back from Cincinnati. And Diana was talking about the employee that goes to Abu Dhabi for stretches of time, and the employee that works in Spain, and now today she mentioned the employee in North Dakota, and I actually laughed out loud because I know people that have said, well, I'm in Indianapolis for those that are listening and don't know that. I have talked to people in Indianapolis that say, well, you know, we're kind of concerned about this person. We're struggling to hire people, and we found someone that lives in, say, Louisville, Kentucky, which is 2 hours away, or everything in Indianapolis.
Cincinnati's 2 hours away.
Yep, Cincinnati's 2 hours away. You know, they're thinking about an employee that's a couple of hours away, and Diana's talking about employees that are in Abu Dhabi and Madrid and mm-hmm. North Dakota, and I literally laughed out loud. Somebody has to listen to this.
Yeah,
you know, the perspective is so out of whack.
Well, yeah. My takeaway was. She has established very clear, and probably her partner, she and her partner, very clear communication and expectations from the employee. And if you hear her talking, you see that they have listed rules, and they want these rules to apply to everyone. And then that each one, they customize the rules by case, by studying the case and what the employees wants and needs, but what's available for each employee is available for everyone. And I think that's a very important key. So, they're not, the people are, they know what they're expected to do. And then also she emphasized the importance of having good technology and servers, and I think that's also a second thing. I was going to say that around probably the time that SOM was established, I was a student at the BAC getting ready to graduate, and we had a pro-practice guest who is a CEO of one of the giant companies in Boston, and like 100-200 years old firm, and I asked her if they're open to flexible hours or flexible work, because at the same time I was taking taking MBA courses, and there were lots of studies about the future of the workplace. So that's probably in 2014, something like that. It was an experiment about Google, who let their employees go flexible, and they gave them like a week for a deadline, and then the first couple of days they did not do any work, but once the deadline approached, everyone was sitting either in a nearby coffee shop or their office, or they could have worked from home, but they chose to come nearby the office to meet with other people. So I wanted to share that with that CEO. I'm not going to mention which firm. She's stepping down right now. And she got mad. I don't know why. I was just a student. I asked a question. She said, unless you are, you're producing renders in China or India, free, like a company or freelancing, then no way. And ask your professor how she's dealing with, my professor was probably in her 40s, but had a baby, how she's dealing with her motherhood. I'm not going to ask any more questions.
Wouldn't it be fun to ask that same that question?
You know, to me, that's the best thing about the pandemic. I mean, there's not that many great things about the pandemic. So, but it opened up people's minds to other ways of doing things. And so there were so many great things that happened over Zoom or other types of situations like this, like kids, high school students put on plays. I mean, we can do anything remotely almost. I mean, not anything, but I mean, obviously it's like a totally different landscape now than it was even 3 years ago, which is great.
Yeah. And I share the same experience with Mandy. I think one of the times I was interviewing for a job, and there were two people interviewing me and the HR And now the more senior person talked to the Scully, and she said, she has a 4-year-old, and probably she's going to get pregnant again. And I was like, I did not indicate that I'm going to have more kids. You don't know anything about my family life, and what's wrong? And he said, who recommended this person? Just like that in front of me, because I'm a mom, and I'm in a childbearing age.
Yeah, I know. It's so unfair. That's totally the way it is. I mean, when I was pregnant, when I got out of graduate school, there's no way I was going to get a job. No way. Every passing day became less likely that I was going to get a job, because who's going to hire someone who's 5 months pregnant or 7 months pregnant? Like,
I did not even have children. And just for the record, for whoever listening, I just had that daughter.
Yeah, it's not fair, but.
It's not fair. I attended an AIA event that had a lot of firm owners of the older generation there. And we had lunch all together. It was I don't know, there were probably 100 people there, but tables of 10. And so I sat with a friend of mine who was also a firm owner, but a table full of men. And they just kind of spoke openly about not hiring women in childbearing age, and as if I wasn't there and right in front of me. But they candidly were openly talking about how they wouldn't, and they don't hire women of childbearing age because from their mouth, they said they will quit. They will have children and quit. And so their perspective was, they don't want to invest in the employee, put the time in, and have them quit. And I just couldn't believe they said it in front of me. I just was shocked that they were speaking their truth, and they come from experience, and maybe they have been through that in their experience, hiring women and having them quit and not come back. Losing employees, maybe that's what they're speaking from. And it's disappointing that they lump all women into that category.
Yeah, well, if they'd been a little more flexible with how people could work or flexible hours, maybe they wouldn't lose women who have children, wouldn't have to quit.
In the last few years, premium outdoor spaces have become a must-have architectural feature. And Infratech outdoor electric heating systems have become the brand of choice among leading architects. Infratech heaters provide energy-efficient, ambient warmth that allows homeowners to live outdoors during the cooler months. Clients love them because they can enjoy up to 100 more nights a year outside. Architects love them because of their unparalleled versatility, from heater capacities and colors to mounting options that can either seamlessly disappear or accentuate a space with beautiful decorative coverings. They're also the only comfort heat company to offer smart home integration and hands-free voice-activated control. For over 60 years, Infratech has made their products in the United States at competitive prices. They offer incredible design and live technical support at every stage of the job. Infratech is specified at the world's most prestigious properties. Learn why and sign up for a free consultation at infratech-usa.com/podcast. You know, where I live in Indianapolis, fall is a beautiful time of year. Right now, the leaves are orange and yellow, and there's a wonderful Christmas in the air. But let's be honest, as beautiful as it is, sitting on the porch and shivering as I watch the neighborhood go by starts to lose its appeal. I guess it's time to consider an Infratech heating system so that I can sit outside at least until all of the leaves have fallen.
I think that's the thing. I think it's ironic that they talked about investing in employees, because obviously if your employee feels compelled to quit after they've had a child, you were not investing in that employee to begin with. You weren't investing. And I think that's one of the important conversations about, you know, we kind of had two parts that are, of course, they're connected, they're interwoven, the equitable practice and the hybrid workplace. But, and like Diana said, yes, we could talk about women, we could talk about moms. That makes sense. That's easy to see and to understand, but it could also be dads, and it could also be people that, you know, like she said, or care for parents, and it's equitable. It gives a level playing field to everybody. And I think that's, well, maybe there already is a level playing field for everybody. It's just so far, so low that very few people can actually survive there. I mean, if we look around, and she said this too, Diana said this too in the conversation, that the profession loses a lot of people. Mm. What does that say? You know, it's not because it's not worthy work. It's not because it's not fulfilling work. And sure, it's wrought with issues in terms of, you know, anytime you're quote unquote serving people and dealing with people in public. I mean, ask somebody in retail, or, you know, dealing with human beings are human beings, but maybe there already is an equitable practice, but maybe the level playing field is so incredibly low that the profession just cannot sustain itself. I hadn't thought about that until now, and that's really depressing to think about it that way, but you know, this idea, and there was somebody in the room today where I spoke mentioned trying to find people that are interested in being the future leaders of the firm. I hear this a lot, you know, and sometimes I speak on employer brand. So that's the perfect segue to that. Today was not, it was talking about being a trusted advisor, take a step back and think about that. You can't find any that wants to lead your firm. Why is that? Why do you think that is? I mean, is it really that big a mystery when, you know, Diana is involved a lot with equity by design? Some people know that equity by design is an evolution of what started out as the missing 32%. The 32% was the number of women that got into the profession and then disappeared, you know, like sort of like what we've been talking about. Why do you think it is? I mean, is it really a mystery why people, especially women and of childbearing years, you know, moms, is it any mystery, right? No. 2 years taking out all that time, I worked 60 hours a week. I cannot imagine being a parent in that situation. Of course, my perspective would be on the dad side, but no way. How could someone other than a young, career committed person survive that? Again, I'm on my soapbox.
I love when she talked about working 32 hours a week and maybe taking a pottery class or something that seems so civilized. Like, what? Just a pottery class and go enjoy myself doing something?
She also mentioned crocheting bathtubs, which I really, really appreciate.
She did appeal to you that way. Well, someone's going to have to learn how to do them because we have a big backlog.
If you're out there listening to this podcast and you know how to crochet a bathtub, Context and Clarity could place an order of about 10,000 units. So putting that out there.
A lot of bathtubs. But yeah, I don't know. Just the idea of having a balanced life like that is something that I still talk about now, even just working for myself. So
I also like the approach that she takes care of her employees even after they decide to leave.
Yeah,
the story she mentioned about the person who felt she needs a ARE group. She set her up with firms that might be appropriate for her, and people who she think they might be independent one day. Sam or Diana, are becoming an incubator of professionals, women, or probably even they might become business owners.
Yep. Yeah, that was pretty great how she helped her, that person who worked for her, find a more suitable firm. I thought that was really caring. You know, that kind of improves. She actually does care about people's well-being you want to work for, I would think.
So I was taking some pretty good notes on she sort of set and explained how she set this up and how it works for her. So I right now have an all remote practice. I hire 1099. It's just other licensed architects that have started their own firms, and it's just sort of that getting off the ground and not bringing in enough income, but definitely able to help out other architects that have a heavy workload. So I love that, but I need my practice to have an office, like for me to have an office and trying to figure out how to make it hybrid has always been a goal of mine. And she answered so many questions for me, like making your own schedule. I loved that. Like the employees can make their own schedule and are trusted to abide by it, which is in a sense, project management skills that are pretty valuable in architecture and maybe a little absent. So I was happy to see that it's not she said they could work 7 days a week. They could work, 2 days a week. Technology's there for us. And I think we should take advantage of it. We should be working more efficiently and grabbing onto that technology. We can be faster. We don't have to sit at a desk for 8 or 9 or 10 hours doing nothing. I don't know about you guys, but, I worked for 14 years before I got licensed in an office. So the back end production team, always wasted time, sitting and doing nothing. And when the boss came by, they would, look busy for a minute. And then there's not enough work to do. So, but you have to be there and not be on your phone and not be on the internet, but look busy, when the boss comes by. That just seems like such a waste to me.
Yeah, it is a huge waste of money for them and then for time for the employees. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny to think that people who are just because they're in your office are work. And we used to spend a lot of time on before the internet, we used to spend a lot of time trying to do filmographies for B or C level actors. That would take us like a whole week project. And then, because we had to call people in Hollywood and stuff. I mean, it was like a huge waste of time. I was only making like $4 an hour at the time, though. I know that justifies it.
I think, the more we talk about this, the more the 40, just take 40 hours, which I don't know how many architects out there are working 40-hour work weeks, but all of that's a construct. And just go to YouTube and put the history of the 40-hour work week, and you're going to find a lot of history about how that came about. But as you were saying that, Mandy, that's the result, right? Hey, you've got to be here. It's the result of not trusting your people and wanting them to have their butt in that chair at that desk for 40 or 50 or 60 or whatever. That's the result. Hey, we're gonna. It also reminded me of the episode in Seinfeld where George was talking about how he can look busy. He just looks annoyed every time his boss walks by, and then the boss thinks he's really busy. But that's part of this construct. And I think I was trying to remember too. Again, listening to interviews with Diana, preparing for this conversation with Diana. The issue of, you've got every firm in the United States on the planet, whatever, starting about mid to late March, turning into a hybrid or even remote firm. It's really important to understand that you can't just take your old policies and your old culture and your old way that you did work as an on-site in-person firm and then somehow jam that into the hybrid workplace model. It doesn't work that way. It's a different construct. It's a different thing. So I think that's super important, because there's going to have to be some mindset shifts for people that actually do want to adopt this sort of workplace.
I like that she has the option to for working in the office, because some people do prefer to work in the office to get away from their house, to get a good clean headspace, you know, where they can focus. I love that. I love that there's an option for in office, or, you know, wherever the wind blows, at a Starbucks, or for us in California, at the beach or in the mountains or something, you know? I think it inspires creativity too. And I think we need more of that in our profession. Just inspiring innovation. We want to work, like, if you are bound to get a job done, a project done, but you really want your own time to go explore the world, then why not try and figure out a more innovative way to get it done quicker, faster? I mean, it's your time that you're in charge of, you know, your own time. So it's just like, if you can come up with good ways to get it done better and faster as an employee, then you get more of your own time back, right?
Well, and I think on the flip side of that, I think employers really need to embrace the idea, the reality. It's not an idea. Embrace the reality that when your employees are able to rest and recharge, they're going to be more energized. They're going to be more productive. They're going to be more creative. So if I'm a person, I used to go to Colorado all the time to go mountain biking, because I had a cousin out there, and I'd take several trips a year and mountain bike and work and bike and drink beer and just have fun in the mountains. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. If you like being on a boat, or you like whatever the thing is that helps you recharge your batteries, that is super important. That's important to the employee. That's beneficial to the employer once they get their head wrapped around that and they can embrace that.
True. And even sometimes the fact that the employers themselves are checking on people or having this attitude of looking over your shoulder intimidates employees, which might cause stress that would decrease the productivity. There's research, published research, that shows, actually they were developing softwares that would read the facial expressions of the manager and tell the manager if today is a good day to have a tour around or not, because if he's not in a good mood and probably doesn't know it, he should stay away from the employees because it's going to affect their productivity negatively. And I actually have a story about that. In my last job, my employer used to take chunks of vacation, like a week or 2 weeks. And I found out that every time he's away, I am 3 times more productive than he's in the office. I could not figure out why. I was like, I'm faster than I want to be. I could not figure out why. Yeah, definitely employees' mental health and the feeling, the loyalty and feeling of being trusted definitely would affect productivity.
Yeah. It was, sorry, go ahead, Catherine.
Oh, I was just going to say, another takeaway I had is when she said the average age was 32. That's like a fully grown adult human less than me. So I thought, oh, maybe I am getting a little old, but I stay young by being open to different ideas and approaches, I suppose, and technologies and whatnot. But yeah, that's pretty young, or at least I'm pretty old. I don't know, but that's like 32. When she was talking about the old people in our industry who aren't very quick to adapt to these things, I think she means people like in their 50s.
Oh, yeah, I would say. I mean, we talked about leaders. Sorry, leaders in the profession. We're kind of dragging you a little bit, if the shoe fits. But I think that makes sense. That's sort of what I would expect. I think, again, you know, missing 32%, that's the probably mainly moms that disappeared. You know, it's back to that whole conversation. And and also to equity. How do we make this a level playing field? How do we make this equitable for everybody? And there's going to be a baseline somewhere, right? And it doesn't surprise me at all that it's in sort of that age group. Doesn't mean that it isn't going to appeal to some older. And again, it's not one size fits all, but it's also going to appeal to some younger as well. I would fully expect that a lot of younger folks, although she made some great points about especially students that were trapped in a dorm room during the pandemic, wanting to connect, you know, in person with people. I didn't think about that. That, you know, fascinating topic, fascinating to look at a firm like SOM. And again, if you're out there listening to this, check out SAM-ARCH.com. So SAAM-ARCH.com. And that is their website. Diana said they used to have their employee manual online. They have a new website now, and the manual will come back. So if you're curious about what their HR policies and procedures are, maybe check back in a little bit and find that manual. I think it could be very enlightening for a lot of people that are thinking about future hybrid work. I know we've made it to the top of the hour in our recording time, which if you're listening to this on the podcast, you have no idea. Just realize I'm looking at a clock. Nobody else sees it if you're listening to it. But Mandy and Isra, thank you for joining us and giving us your takeaways and takes on this conversation and experience from your career. And hopefully this gives you some hope and some ideas for the future. And Catherine, as always, thanks for joining me on all of these, this whole adventure. Mm-hmm. Appreciate you being here. I don't know how many, you know, we've talked about the fact that we have done 400 context and clarity conversations. We've done now 41 context and clarity live, the simulcast version. I don't know off the top of my head how many of these backstages. I enjoy these. I love getting the takeaway and.
Yeah, more than I was surprised when I looked through. I feel like it just started, but I guess a couple months now.
Yeah. So thank you to all of you for being a part of this.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure.
We'll have you back soon.
We will have you back soon. And for those of you that are listening, next week, next Thursday, is the Thanksgiving holiday in the United States. So we won't have a Context and Clarity Live. We're going to actually celebrate the holiday. We're going to take a little bit of time off for that, but we'll be back the following week, which is, what's the date on that?
December 2nd. Oh, don't even ask.
December 2nd, we'll be back for Context and Clarity Live. We'll have Pascal Sablon. She is president-elect of NOMA, the National Organization of Minority Architects. That's going to be a fantastic conversation as well. If you're not familiar with Pascal, you need to look her up. She is a young African American woman. She is extremely dynamic. She's got a lot of irons in the fire. She's a great speaker as well. I've spoken at a couple of conferences where she has as well. I've really enjoyed hearing her and sort of watching what she's doing. I think you're going to enjoy that conversation. So join us live December 2nd to talk to Pascal, and then of course we'll go backstage again to record one of these, our takeaway episode. So until then, have a great holiday, everybody. I will record a sort of a retrospective version of the podcast for next week, talk about my takeaways for the last 19 months. But until next week or 2 weeks when we have the next Context and Clarity Live and backstage, please take a little bit of time to breathe and enjoy and relax. Enjoy whoever you enjoy being with. And hope you can find some rejuvenation and join us back here in a couple of weeks. So thanks, everybody.
I want to say thank you to Infratech Outdoor Comfort Heating for their support of this episode of the Context and Clarity podcast. Visit infratechusa.com/podcast to sign up for a free consultation and learn why Infratech is the choice for bringing indoor comfort to outdoor living. All right. Well, now you know what we thought and what we're going to do with what we learned. But what did you think? What did we miss? I really hope that there was some big takeaway from the Context and Clarity Live conversation or from our breakdown right here that will help you with your business. DM me on Instagram or on Twitter and let me know what your takeaways were. You can find me on all the socials at Jeff_Eccles. So send me a message and let me know what your takeaway was. And if you want more conversations like this, subscribe to the Context and Clarity podcast and leave us an honest review and rating. Those things really help us to get the message out and help us to help more architects just like you. Oh, and follow Context and Clarity on Instagram as well. There you can get a heads up on everything that's coming up. In our next episode, Catherine and I will host Context and Clarity Live again with a new special guest and a new theme for next week. There's always something new to look forward to. And if you love content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment. And it's also the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know you'll find something there that interests you. You can learn more at GableMedia.com. That's GABLMedia.com. And finally, if the topic of today's episode is of particular interest to you and you'd like to dig deeper into it, then join me over in the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity conversations, and we take topics just like this and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community and your practice and how you can support those around you. Catherine and I will be back for our next episode. And in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entree Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context may be.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.